888-787-5529. You know, you ever wonder what it would be like to be hit by a Brian Urlacher? Well, another guy, one of the rare people like Brian Urlacher at linebacker that could do it all was a guy named Seth Joyner, who could pound a quarterback, could cover, was fast enough to cover wide receiver and other positions, and really knows the complete essence of the game. By the way, he's going to be an essence of, we hope, Protégé Sports in the future as well. Seth, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Nick, how you doing today?
Good. Listen, we talked to Jared Bell yesterday. I wanted your comment on this, what he had to say about what people might misperceive as a Chicago Bears offense that doesn't have versatility. Here's Jared Bell from USA Today.
Hey, man, I think the thing that the Bears offer is they've got some versatility in the ways they can produce points. I mean, it's not just on Rex Grossman and the offense. They've got Devin Hester, who's going to have a huge impact in this game one way or the other. Even if he doesn't have any returns and they're trying to kick the ball away and they shank some punts or whatever, you know, Devin Hester is a factor in this thing. And then the Bears' defense and their propensity to take the ball away can give you field position or points as well. So I think that's what can equalize it for the Chicago Bears.
Now that we've had another week to think about this, Seth, how do you see this game going, and what about the Chicago Bears? People, you know, we talked earlier about underdogs. Do you think it helps them?
I definitely think it works in their favor. I'm just of the belief that any time that the whole world is predicting that one team is going to just run away with this thing, more times than likely, the other team is the one that wins, because that team gets really motivated. And I really like his key points about Chicago's offense and their ability to score in many, many different facets. And he's 100% correct. You know, most teams, they're only going to put points on the board via their offense. You know, when you look at the Chicago team, they probably scored more defensive touchdowns this year than probably any defense in the league. And, and Mr. Hester with, you know, his six returns, you know, his six record returns this year on the special teams.
Unbelievable.
That's something else.
And you worry about it when you see that the Patriots were able to get an 80-yard kickoff return, even when Vinatieri kicked 2 or 3 yards deep into the end zone. What about Desmond Clark and what he brings to that Chicago offense by creating space in the middle? What would you do as a linebacker to monitor him?
Well, the thing about Chicago, they do a good job with their tight end. I think they're going to be somewhat challenged because of the way that Indianapolis runs their defense. They'll basically run all three linebackers off the ball, and then when they bring Bob Sanders down in the box, based upon formation and what Chicago's tendencies are, they'll move him either weak side or strong side. Anytime they move him strong side, you can best believe that he's going to be on the tight end and man coverage. They might even have a bracket on him. But I think they're going to have to take their shots and try to make some opportunities. Anytime you get both safeties, Bob Sanders is back in his halves coverage, I think that's their time to, go hard play action and attack the middle of the field and use Desmond Clark, because he's a huge target. He could be a big asset to Rex Grossman.
Likewise, on the other side, Dick Vermeil yesterday was saying that Dallas Clark may even have the edge because he's only about 235. He's very agile. Most of the time, the Colts line up with three wide receivers, one tight end. They spread the field out. Who has the edge there between Dallas and Desmond Clark?
Well, I think, they pose some different problems to defenses. I think Desmond Clark is a more well-rounded tight end from the standpoint that he blocks well. He's a big body. He's not going to hurt you up the seam the way that that Dallas Clark can, but, he can catch some balls. Dallas Clark, on the other hand, I kind of equate him to a Jay Novacek type. I played a lot of years against Jay Novacek, and it's almost like playing against a bigger wide receiver. Just good agility, ran good routes, great hands. And the most important thing, when you're dealing with guys like that is you have to get a hit on those guys at the line of scrimmage. I think you have to give Indianapolis a lot of credit because in that AFC Championship game, basically, New England said, you're not going to beat us with your wide receiver. And they didn't figure out until the second half that they could have Dallas Clark, just about anywhere on the field that they wanted him because they were so
anywhere
that they wanted him because they were so intent on making sure that they had their safeties deep enough and that they had enough width to make sure that they weren't going to give up the big play. And then it was almost like magic. All of a sudden they came out at halftime and said, well, if they're taking away our wideouts, that means we can get the tight end up the seam. That means, you know, we can get our backs with checkdowns and hit those guys on the weak side with seam routes. And that's exactly what they did. I mean, a huge day for Dallas Clark, you know, 6 receptions, 123 yards, and a touchdown in that game. And most of that coming, almost all of it coming in the second half.
Well, most people are saying that even if Indianapolis wins, it's going to be a close one. And joining us now is arguably the greatest kicker in the history of the game. You know, I'd like to say I wasn't so bad either, but Morton Anderson, my gosh, 20 for 23 field goals at the age of 46! Unbelievable!
A lot of fun, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
And one of your misses was dead on from 52. You had one blocked. It really wasn't, I don't know if it was really your fault. I mean, one of your best years ever. Morton, you know Adam Vinatieri. We've had him on the show. Seth Joyner's joining us right now. We're talking about a close game. Robbie Gould's got to be full of confidence after that 49-yard game-winning field goal a few weeks ago. Tell us about how important the mental approach to the kicking game is as you're getting ready for that Super Bowl. You've played in one. Tell us what it's like.
Yeah, I played in one in 99 against Denver Elways last year, and I didn't do a real good job of preparing myself. It was the stage was so big that we also had 2 weeks between the championship game and the Super Bowl that there
That's
were a lot
be
of
hard.
There were a lot of time, you know, a lot of time to read the headlines, and of course we had a couple of off the field incidents that you might recall that we don't need to go into the details of that was distracting to the team, I think, but from a preparation standpoint, boy, the team that can just keep it as normal as possible, and that sounds almost like hypocrisy because it's impossible down there in Miami, I mean, with all the parties and all that, all the media attention, but the team that can keep it as normal as possible probably be the best ready to roll on Sunday.
Morton, how about the fact that they're all the quarterbacks are cooing about how they can rub their own balls in, so to speak. They can get the footballs just the way they want them on, you know, Manning's all excited, Grossman's all excited because there's no competitive edge. And then the poor kickers, all you have to do is remember what happened with Tony Romo a few weeks ago. The kicking balls are barely touched. They're slippery. What kind of an edge does that bring to certain teams?
Well, I think it's a good rule. I mean, and let's not forget that kickers had their way with the football for many years. We didn't
they
get
had
caught,
their way. But, I love it.
We didn't get caught, but, you know, it is what it is, you know. I mean, I think it's a good rule that the quarterbacks, because they're the ones touching the ball the most defensively, and so that's a good rule. And
but isn't that ball more slippery?
I mean, it is a little bit, you know, as far as kicking the ball, you mean?
It's more for Tony Romo to catch the ball. The same thing with Carson Palmer
getting
the touchdown, and suddenly they fumble it for Cincinnati at Denver, the last game of the season.
Yeah, I was never a big fan of the starting quarterback being the holder anyway, because he doesn't have time to practice with the field goal unit anyway. I think having a punter or a backup quarterback would be a much better situation.
Well, buddy, before we let you go, just give us your own prediction on this game. Do you think that Adam has a chance to become the first kicker in history to kick game-winning field goals with two different teams?
He certainly does. I don't think it'll be that close, personally. I think offensively, I think the Colts have a little bit too much firepower. I do think the X factor for Chicago is Hester. I think he's a very dangerous return guy. If he puts a couple up on the board, I think Chicago could win it. But I'm picking the Colts. I'll be down there for Danish television. I'm looking forward to it.
What's it like with Danish television? But one last question here. What's it like with Danish television? How much do you have to spend your time? I'm assuming that your Danish is still absolutely fluent. How much time do you have to spend just explaining the game itself?
No, we're beyond that now. I mean, you have a hardcore group in Denmark now watching this game. Remember, it's 6 hours later there, so when the game goes on at 6:25 or whenever we kick it off on Sunday, it's after midnight, so the partying is on and rolling up in Copenhagen and all over Denmark. But you got hardcore fans; they know the rules, they know the game, and so we can get pretty detailed with it. But it is Danish. We get the feed up, of course, from the American feed, so we have to figure out what's being explained there and then make sense of it. But it's pretty fun.
Well, thanks for joining us, brother. You're a Hall of Famer in my book.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Have a great evening.
Thanks, Morton.
Bye.
Seth Joyner, let's get back before we get joined, hopefully by Rick Goslin in a minute for the Dallas Morning News. As you listen to the different things going on in Miami, what is beginning to be the big distinction between the two teams? We talked about the underdog factor. Many people say that this is also just the fact that it's Manning's time, that may be the edge itself and the confidence brimming from what he did in the last game. How do you see it?
I don't know. You know, I look at the whole Manning thing, and I think there's so much emphasis put on, you know, him playing well and winning this game, because this is going to be the game that defines him and cements his name, you know, in football lore greatness. He hasn't played well under pressure situations, you know, Nick. And I have to go back and look at how he played throughout the entire playoffs. For all intents and purposes, he played one good half of football in three games in the playoffs. Two touchdowns and six interceptions. That's very un-Manning-like. In the first half, New England was able to get tremendous pressure on him, really just had him confused. And they were coming with some different blitzes and some different things and whatnot. When you look at the Chicago defense, they have the ability to get on him. If they can get the run under control, they have the ability to get on him with just the four guys that they have up front. And I'm just of the mindset and of the belief that, you know, that I still think the way that you beat Indianapolis, the way that you beat Peyton Manning, is you put constant pressure on him all the time. You don't allow him to sit in the pocket and pick and choose who he wants to throw that ball to. And I think the Chicago defense has enough pass rush. They've got enough pass rushers. They've got enough different schemes that they can create that pressure.
Here's Dick Vermeil talking about Rex Grossman and whether talent is more important than experience in this kind of game.
I don't think he'll be the guy that wins the game, but he could be the guy that loses the game. He's the kind of quarterback right now in his career that you win along with. And sometimes you have to win in spite of him.
Whoa. What do you think about this? Has this been the most unfair, shall we say, negative campaign against one quarterback you've ever seen?
Well, I think it is, and I think what is beginning to do is motivate this young kid more than anything, because everybody's talking about him being the Achilles heel of this Chicago Bears, team. In actuality, you know, his numbers aren't stellar, but if you go back and look at the two playoff games that he's played, you know, his numbers and his ratings are probably better than Peyton Manning and Tom Brady's, because all they asked him to do is manage the game. Let's face it, this team is built on defense and Devin Hester's ability to give the offense good field position and opportunities to either turn, you know, his returns into 6 points or turn them into 3 points. Okay, so all he has to do is manage the game. Just as long as he doesn't turn it over, they're fine. And Nick, before we go to break, let me just give you this one stat. Do you know anytime that he turns the ball over two times or less, they always win all season long? If he's thrown two interceptions or less, they've won every single game that they played this year.
Yeah, well, they also had a weak schedule. We'll talk about that, though, about who he really thinks is going to win. I believe Devin Hester could be that kind of edge as well. When we come back, listen to the insight from Seth Joyner, all-pro linebacker on Sports Byline and Sirius Channel 122.